20 years ago, at a conference I attended of theologians and professors of religion, an Indian Christian friend told the assembly, "We are going to hear about the beauties of several traditions, but that does not mean we are going to make fruit salad." When it came my turn to speak, I said, "Fruit salad can be delicious." I shared the Eucharist with Father Daniel Berrigan, and our worship became possible because of the sufferings we Vietnamese and the Americans shared over many years. Some of the Buddhists present were shocked to hear that I had participated in a Eucharist. Christians seemed truly horrified. To me, religious life is life. I do not see any reason to spend one's whole life tasting just one kind of fruit. We human beings can be nourished by the best values of many traditions. Professor Hans Kung has said, until there is a peace between religions, there can be no peace in the world. People kill and are killed because they cling too tightly to their own beliefs and their own ideologies. When we believe that ours is the only faith that contains the truth, violence and suffering will surely result. The second reading is also from the same author. A sangha in Buddhism is the community that comes together to worship. So, it may not be a holy sangha, but if it moves in the direction of transformation, it is a real sangha. We do not need a perfect or holy sangha to practice. We can help build and improve the sangha by practicing mindfully, step by step, encouraging each other. Let us take a minute of quiet meditation to think about what Thich Nhat Hanh said to us. Now let us pick up our green hymnals and turn to 1008, where our heart, when our heart is in a holy place.
Thank you.
sometime in December, I think it was December, because my husband was sick for January, February, March, so I know that I was going to church in December. Kleber made a statement, and I'm paraphrasing, not quoting, and he can correct me if I paraphrase incorrectly, but his statement essentially said that when we share our stories, we get to know each other better and we become closer as a group. And so today, I would like to tell you why I'm a Unitarian Universalist. Not that my story is better or unique or different, it's just my story, and maybe it will encourage others to come up here and tell their stories. I did not grow up like many of you did as a Unitarian. I grew up as a Roman Catholic. I so strongly believed in it that at 15, I entered the convent. I went in and became what was called an aspirant. And I went through the aspirancy, then you go to college and you're a postulant and a novitiate, and oh yes, you leave the world for an entire year and live in silence for a year. And then I became a nun. Now, the sisters did a wonderful thing for me. They gave me a superb education, among which was a superb theological education. They managed somehow to get the people who studied the Dead Sea Scrolls to teach us. Now, I don't mean studied about the Dead Sea Scrolls. I mean, these were the people over in the Middle East, translating them and writing books about them as they were discovered. So I had a superb group of teachers. And ironically, it is these same teachers that led to my questioning everything I had ever learned in my entire life. When they talked about historical context and etiology of words, I started thinking, this doesn't make sense. None of this makes sense. And all the doubts that I had all along, but didn't have the education to question, were now able to be looked at and be questioned, and I left the convent. Now, I want to say that while some people leave the convent bitter and angry and upset, I really didn't. I got, besides my education, I got some really good values, values that I hold now. One of them is something called agape, and agape is a kind of love. It is a love that is neither parental or brother and sister or relative or romantic love. It is a love that makes you extend yourself among the community of those who worship together. And it is loving all those people as if they were yourself. And I try to carry that concept. Do I always live up to it? Heavens, no. But it's something I took with me that I try to hold on to. The other concept I got was the concept of community, that we exist within a community, and layers and layers and layers of community. But if we can always go back to the community that we worship with, then we will always be able to foster and keep that agape so we don't lose it and become cynical and bitter as we get out into the real world and things happen to us that may not be positive. And we can then try to bring that into those other situations. The last thing I got out of being in the convent was a sense of social justice. I have an FBI file because I dared as a Roman Catholic nun to go into Catholic property and march with a man who was unknown at the time by the name of Jesse Jackson to integrate the Catholic churches in Milwaukee. Still have the file. Found that out when I went to graduate school. I don't know what they're looking for, but they're looking for something. They still have it active. So those values of agape, community, and social justice are things that I took with me from my background as a Roman Catholic and a school sister of St. Francis. Now, I did carry some resentment, not anger, resentment, which is a little bit different. So I decided I wasn't going to join any church. The churches were not trustworthy. So for 10 years, I didn't attend a church after I left. But you know the questions of what's my place in the universe? Why did I come here? Of all the things that evolved, why me? How did it happen? Is there an ultimate entity? Is there not an ultimate entity? Is there life after death? Is there not life after death? And what is this thing called Mother Earth? And is it important? Is it not important? And that little thing in the back of my mind that the theologians taught me, that the first God was named a mother God in the Bible, and all those things wouldn't go away. But I didn't know where to go to church. And no, not a clue. So I began a long odyssey of looking into various Protestant religions, some of which I actually joined because I thought, if I don't join this church and immerse myself in it, I'm not really going to be able to discover what this is really about. But I had the same problems. The problems of organized religion kept following me. I found the same game playing and the kinds of things that led me, not just the theology, but the social things that led me out of the Catholic Church also followed me into Protestantism, and so did some of the questions. The main one being, if God is good and holy, then what in the world is wrong with us? And can someone please explain the concept of original sin so I could get it? And they never could. So I went from church to church, even a Unitarian church. Now, when I left Louisiana and I went to Chicago, back home, we didn't actually go to Chicago. We went to a suburb. Unitarian churches were 30 miles away. And I can tell you that I knew I wasn't getting up Sunday morning and going through Chicago traffic to get to a Unitarian church. So I continued my little four-way. And I came upon a wonderful Northern Baptist church with a great group of teachers. There was Sunday school, and they had two, one that was co-ed and one that seemed to be a men's group. And occasionally I would sneak out of my Sunday school class and I would sit outside of the men's classroom because these people were fascinating. They were either former ministers or retired ministers, and they knew Greek. And they would fight over things in such an interesting but kind way, I couldn't stay away. And one morning they said, "Dee, are you afraid of us?" And I said, "No, I was told it's a men's group, and I just couldn't stay away, so I'm listening in the hall." And they started laughing and said, "Oh, no, no, that's just our minister says that. Come on and join us." And I got something wonderful. Excuse me, that's just allergies. I got something wonderful from that Protestant tradition. Something spoken at the other churches, but I didn't really get it till I attended that church. And that concept was, no one is an intermediary between you and ultimate reality. Whatever you call that reality, Mother God, Father God, no word for it. No one is an intermediary between you. You have your own truth. That blew me away. It was a concept that was wonderful, but it still left me with this question. about if God is so good and great, then why do we have the world we have? Why do we have this? Why do we have original sin? Why, somebody explain that to me. Explain to me why you would so-called send your son and then crucify him. None of that made sense to me. The logic of it defied me. And as wonderful as these guys were, and even though some of them said, you don't have to believe Jesus is God, it still left me with many, many questions. So I just decided I could not stay there. So once again, I was churchless. About the same time, my mother died. Now, I would love to tell you, as a psychologist, I had all these wonderful rational responses to my mother's death. But I didn't. I was furious that she died. I thought, this just raises all the questions of life, death, good God, bad God, all up again. I was very irrational. Now, of course, I did not let people know this. And everybody told me how wonderfully I was handling my mother's death, but I wasn't. I was also angry that she died and my father, who I didn't particularly appreciate, was alive. I was very judgmental about my father. I considered him a genius who was an idiot. Very hard, very judgmental. While I was all upset and angry about my mother's death, I went to a bookstore, and I'm just looking at psychology books, and they happen to have them positioned by the Eastern religion books. And on an end cap was the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. I picked it up. I started reading it, and I was astounded. You have an inner nature. You're born with that inner nature, and that inner nature is good. You are not an evil person. You do not need to have somebody come from the sky and redeem you. This was astounding to me. And it fell in with what I thought, with beliefs that I had somehow developed. About the same time I began my internship, and I happened to have the book in my book bag, and my internship supervisor said, I'm reading that book too. And we began our own little study club. And for 10 years, two of us took Buddhist books and read them weekly and discussed them weekly. And I don't mean we went through one book in a week, but I'm saying that's what we did. We attended various Buddhist temples. But we both had the same problem. We have authority problems. And both of us had huge difficulty going in and bowing before the monk who was teaching us. Now, we got the concept in our heads that everyone has the Buddha nature, and we have been conditioned through our upbringing to not know that we have it and to forget it in other people. So what you're bowing to is not this particular monk, but to his Buddha nature. Well, if that's true, then we should all bow to each other too. So I had a lot of difficulty with that concept, and a concept called guru worship. So I halfway committed to Buddhism, except for the philosophy and the practice. I committed to that. I just couldn't commit to guru worship. Then I moved here. When I moved here, I happened to find a temple across the river. And it was wonderful. It was very open. The monk did not require that we go like that. In fact, when we came in, he went to us first. And for 3 years, I went there. And then he up and left. And then I looked at other temples, other places, and I'm back with my original problem. But I'm still practicing Buddhism. I'm still doing the meditation, reading the books, etc. And Ruth happened to see, Ruth Maskow, who was a member of this church, and many of you know, happened to see one of my books, and she goes, Oh, I got something for you. And the next week she comes with a pamphlet on Buddhists who are Unitarians. I went, what? Oh. And I got on the website, and what their mission was to be a Unitarian, but to figure out, while being a Unitarian, how to practice the Buddhist philosophy and meditation. And I went, whoa, that's for me. So I start coming to this church in 2007. And I joined it, and I pledged, and I paid money. But I never owned Unitarianism. If somebody asked me, do you go to church? I go, oh, yes. Where do you go? Well, I go to the Unitarian church because they allow me to practice Buddhism. I swear I did. I'm not. And so this is how I felt. And I loved this church, absolutely loved it. But there was that part of me that held back. Part of me that would never say, I am a Unitarian. One day, in November, I was meditating. And on my altar, I have representations of my two teachers. One is a card of a representation of Jesus. Now, it is not a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus, not my picture. My picture is a dark-skinned man with kind of wild hair from Middle East, okay? The other one is a Buddha. And I'm meditating, and I'm kind of thinking. I'm doing not doing breathing meditation. I'm doing insight meditation. And I'm thinking, I don't have a Unitarian symbol here. I go to Unitarian church. I ought to have a Unitarian chalice. So I march down to Mississippi Mud, and I tell them, I want you to make me a Unitarian chalice. That was in November 2011. And I'm standing there, and he says, oh, you go to the Unitarian church? And he says, yeah. He says, I said, you know what? I should have got on the web and brought you a symbol of a Unitarian chalice. He says, no problem. So we get on the web, and as he's searching for chalices, now, I'm going to tell you, this was not like St. Paul's conversion. No light came out of the sky. The earth did not move. No voice spoke. As I'm standing there, I'm explaining to this man that I want this chalice for my altar, not for my church. He says, oh, you have an altar? I says, yes, I have a picture, and I explain to him. And as he's looking on the computer for a representation of a Unitarian chalice, I said, and I blurted it out loud, oh my God. And he said, what? And I said, oh, nothing. But what hit me at that moment is the only reason that I could have an altar that had a picture to represent my Christian background, that I could have a rock to represent my little dabbling into paganism, Mother Earth, okay, and that I could have a Buddha, is because I am a Unitarian. There is no other organization like this. I could not walk in any other place that I personally know of. Now, maybe there is, but I really don't know it. That would allow me to find truth wherever I can find it. I can take something from the Christians. I can take something from the Buddhists. And I can sit down and follow the path that makes the most sense to me. And if I walked in here with the Quran, I don't think anybody would shove me out the door. And I realized, oh my goodness. You want to talk about agape? A love where somebody isn't going to shoot you out the door because you don't think like they do? That's in my church. You want to talk about community and support? That's in my church. And at that moment in Mississippi Mud, November 2011, I became a Unitarian. And that's why I'm a Unitarian Universalist.